So we are beginning our fall practice period, which is spirituality and creativity, entitled Living a Life of Mindful Creativity. And when we do practice periods, it's an opportunity to really pull together as a Sangha and everybody who is able to make a commitment to participate fully in all the events that happen. There'll be 8 Mondays where we'll gather. I'll be here every other Monday giving a Dharma talk. Also, Dharma talks in between those weeks will be online. So all the Dharma talks will be online, but so I'm here tonight and there'll be a Dharma talk. There'll also be a Dharma talk for next week, which will be online, which you can listen to, because we're going to have 8 topics as we move through the weeks. So most weeks there will be a Dharma talk online. And we do that because there's a lot of people from afar who are participating with us in this practice period. And so they access things. They're either sent to them by email or they access them online and do the same things we're doing as a community where they live. I have a schedule I'll be passing out tonight. And there's also a sign-up sheet to receive the emails from each week of the particular practice. We have a topic each week, and there'll be a particular practice that for you to do as part of this practice period at home. Whenever we take on a practice period or a period of time where we want to have concentrated on a particular practice, like we are doing now with spirituality and creativity, it's most helpful if we have an intention and we know what our intention is. Where we sit in the morning, it's helpful to have a little altar with a candle on it. And when we light the candle in the morning, to remember why it is we're practicing. And particularly why we are, and specifically, I should say, why we are doing the practice period together. We probably have some personal reasons for practicing. To be more mindful, to be more compassionate, to touch some peace of mind, to rest in our mind and body, to feel lighter. All of these things naturally arise out of our practice of meditation and mindfulness. And it's also helpful to always be in touch with our larger ideal as well, the bodhisattva ideal, which is what motivates the deepest source of our practice. Our larger motive is our heart's deepest longing in our life. And typically it's expressed in what we do for the sake of all beings. We do for the benefit of all beings. And to remember that particular ideal is very helpful. Remember when we first sit down in the morning at our cushion and light the candle. That's what our life is about. And what that creates is a place of safety for ourselves, a place of refuge. Because as we go out in our daily lives, so many distractions, so many disturbances, there's so much going on that we don't like, that it's easy just to get caught in real negative places inside of ourselves. And negative places cut us off from the world that's right there in front of us. We get into a place of closing down, becoming smaller, becoming narrower. And so in those times when we are mindful, we are aware of what's going on in our mind, and we come back to ourselves, we come back to our intention, we come back to that safe place, which we know is more true about who we are. And that is that we offer what we do, what we think, what we say, for the benefit of the world, for the benefit of other beings. And in that way, our mindfulness can really live throughout our days. We touch our goodness, and that's what we offer in the world. And it allows for a kind of clarity of mind, and also a kind of creativity in responding to the moment-by-moment way the world
opens up for us. It allows us to be responsive in the world rather than reactive. And to that in itself is truly an expression of our creativity.
When we take up the topic of creativity, immediately what comes to mind is that we have to create something. I've got to do something. I've got to produce something. But I want to talk about creativity in its largest, most broad, and most deeply true sense. And that is, each and every one of us is a product of creation. We are creatively embodied. Life is creative. And the source of life, although unknown to us, is creative. And we are part of it. We are creation unfolding in each moment. We are the universe manifesting itself in each second. When we drink water, we are manifesting the deep springs in the earth. We are manifesting the rain, the ocean. We are embodying the glaciers and the snow caps on the mountains, the rivers, the lakes. We are not separate from any of those. And the universe is recreating itself in each moment through us. So from the very beginning, I want to dispel any idea or any misconception of, am I creative or not? We are all creative from the very beginning. And we are all intimately entwined with creativity in every second. The universe is recreating itself through us all the time. We tend to forget that or not notice it. So we have a practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness is a way to touch that universe manifesting through us in each moment. I have a friend who told me this story a couple of nights ago. Every morning when his little boy was young, before he sent him off to school, he would sit on the front stoop of his house and they would sit and notice three new things. They sat in the exact same spot at the exact same time every morning, and there was never any difficulty at all in noticing three new things. Both of these people are deeply creative people. One's a photographer, the other's an architect. With mindfulness, we see how moment by moment we are creating our lives. We are part of the creation of our lives. We had this wonderful DVD that we watched yesterday called I Am. And one of the things that they showed in I Am was they put these little probes into a Petri dish of yogurt. The yogurt responded to the thoughts of the words of the person who was sitting right there in front of the yogurt. He was not connected to the yogurt in any way in particular. Yet, the yogurt, full of all sorts of bacteria, was responding to him. And we know this. You know, we know we respond to each other all the time. When someone smiles at us, right away there's a response. If somebody is angry at us or frowns at us, right away there's a response. Without any words, we are always responding to each other and to the situation. Our attention affects those around us. We can see how it directly affects the people around us, but it also affects the environment around us, the world around us. We live in a field of creation. The field of life, and we're part of that. And whatever we do affects the whole field. The image that's given in Buddhism is the net of Indra. The net of Indra has all things sentient and insentient connected like a vast web. Where all those connections are is a little jewel, and that jewel, multifaceted, reflects everything else. every other jewel, every other connection in the web. It's like a spider's web. If you touch it at just one point, the whole web is impacted. That is very much the basis of our practice in mindfulness. And we are creating the world with every thought, with every action. Our practice during this 8-week period together is to touch that in many ways. Our natural productive work is creative when we bring that spirit and attention and caring to it, our mindfulness. It becomes inspired. And I know, you know, we all know that the work we do in our lives tends to become rote. And also, when we've really chosen it from our heart, then renewing that connection over and over again allows it to continue to be inspired and creative. It's like the people that we choose to have relationship with in our lives as well. We make the choices of the people we love and we connect with, not from thinking, this would be a good person for me to know because, you know, I can do this with them or they can do this. I mean, maybe that's where it starts, but ultimately our connection all ends up being about our heart. It's not our rational mind, it's something deeper happens, and in that deeper connection, the relationship stays alive and inspired and creative. Our very real practice of mindfulness is touching everything we do with that attention, intention, and spirit and caring. I have a friend who told me that when she first met her husband, every morning she always insisted on making the bed, and he couldn't understand that. And he said, you know, why make the bed? Nobody's going to be here, nobody's going to see if the bed's made or not, and it's just going to get messed up again tonight. And she said to him, we make the bed because we make the bed. It's flowers for the void. Because we take care of things in our lives. When we cook a meal with love, it is an act of creativity. When we put boards together for a shoe rack, very simple, and we do it with our full attention, our full mindfulness. These are acts that are generative, not only generative in producing things, but in the spirit it generates in us and in the world. And this is the fountain of creativity. Stilling the mind, touching the source. So, because our mind is pretty habituated to thinking, judging, figuring out, planning, our creativity, our true creativity comes from a deeper place. So we come back to our breath. And we just rest in our breath. And it helps, you know, like to have the intention when we sit down on the cushion is, I'm not going to plan the day. I'm not going to solve a problem. I'm not going to work out a project. I'm just going to sit quietly. And I'm going to let myself and the world be just as it is. I'm going to accept myself and the world wholeheartedly. And we come back to our breath, and we hear the distant sound of the traffic. And we keep coming back. And we let the world in, and we let ourselves be part of the world, which is, of course, the truth of our existence, that we are part of it all. We include everything. We drop any judgment, and we drop any planning. We just simply sit quietly. It's a wonderful, wonderful. From that still and open place that we find that our creativity arises, our true creativity. It's from that place that we know what it is we love. It's from having listened to ourselves that we know what our career is, or what our hobby is, what our passion is, how we want to spend our days, who we want to spend our days with. It is from that place that we find connection and expression. In the first week, from that quiet place, see if a creative project expresses itself through you. Is this something you've wanted to do? It might be something you've already started and you want to finish it, but just see if something speaks to you. From that quiet place, if the inspiration is to do a beautiful flower arrangement, do a flower arrangement. If it's to write a song or a poem. Work with clay, solve a problem. Hang a gate, make a button. Don't let your mind limit you in any way. Let yourself be as big as the universe. Because you are. We tend to think of creativity as something we do, or we tend to think of it as a special quality that some people possess, not necessarily us. But creativity is who we are. And it's not only activity. It's every person. Every person is already a creation, is already creative. When we begin to touch that, we touch this incredible joy of existence, this incredible energy of existence. We can see that in the world sometimes. Sometimes something happens that touches us. And a friend told me just this morning about one time when he was watching crows. He saw this one crow come up into the air and spinning and twisting, and then drop. And he watched, and what he saw was this crow had a nut. And he was flying up into the air, dropping the nut, doing all these aerial acrobatics, and then swooping down and catching the nut. And he did it over and over and over again. He said it was such an inspiration to see that joy, that creativity that crow was expressing with that nut. And I had an experience similar to that once when I was swimming in a sea lion nursery. It was this little bay behind an island where a group of sea lions left all their babies while they went out and fished. I happened to be fortunate to be swimming in that area. There were, I don't know, maybe 20 baby sea lions, young little sea lions. And one of them came up with a starfish in its mouth, and I dove down under it and looked up, and it dropped the starfish, and I caught it. And then it dove down under me, and I dropped the starfish, and it caught it. Wonderful. There's a wonderful poem in our sutra book written by Hakuin Zenji. Hakuin was a Zen master who lived in 1700s in Japan. It's called the Song of Meditation, or Song of Zazen. In that poem, at one point, he says, singing and dancing are the voice of the law. Singing and dancing are the Dharma. It's the way everything works. It's what we are. if you look under a microscope, an electron microscope, at cells, cells are dancing. They are alive with generativity. Within cells, there are these very unique little creatures called mitochondria. Mitochondria are the powerhouse of our cells. They produce the energy. And yet they have their own DNA. They have DNA separate from the DNA that makes my hair this way and my eyes this way and your nose that way. They think that at one point mitochondria were a bacteria that inhabited our cells. And they have their own dance. And it is the dance of the generativity of life, is the dance of energy. And again, if you look at mitochondria, they say they're just dancing. We are all the body of the Buddha. We are all an expression of the whole, each and every one of us. This is the truth of who we are, and somehow it's gotten closed off and covered over by our judgments. I'm not creative. I'm not good enough. I should do it this way. Ooh, I did that drawing and it's really ugly. Our ideas, our discrimination about what's beautiful and what's not. Instead of letting our hearts sing and our bodies dance, that's the truth of who we are. A year ago, we remodeled a building up at Mountain Lamp. The person that we had do the carpentry, a young man that has worked with us on various projects when we were doing an addition on our first house in the 80s. He was just starting out as a carpenter. He was in his 20s. Now he's 50. And he does exquisite work, beautiful work. As he was working on this building at Mountain Lamps, the cottage, we talked with him. He's really interested in how our lives have developed, and you know that it's a meditation center, and he's very thrilled to be working there. He also worked on the meditation hall at Mountain Lamp. So over this 25-30 year period, he's worked for us a number of times. He said at one point he decided that he didn't want to just be a carpenter. He wanted to find his life's expression through carpentry. He thought, oh, well, I read fine home building, and I learn how to do this, and I learn how to do that, and I get really good at pounding nails, and I never miss the hammer or hit my thumb. And I get all these skills, and indeed, that's obviously something that is helpful. He said, but you know, what really was important, the skills are important, but the thing that was most important, more important than anything else, was working with his mind. When frustration came up, how did he work with it? What did he do with the frustration? Did he throw his hammer across the room? Or did he come back to himself, begin again? When he made a terrible mistake and 3 days' work was going to have to be redone, what did he do? Did he say, I quit? Did he say, I'm not good enough to do this? Did he have sleepless nights? He said he worked with his mind. He came back and he looked at what was wrong. He breathed in and he breathed out and he said, I thought about it until I thought I knew how I could fix it. He problem solved. He said all sorts of ideas came up, and what he said ultimately came out of it, working with frustration, with disappointment, with self-criticism and judgment, with horrendous mistakes, with people unhappy about what he was doing, with external and internal sources of disappointment, working with that over and over again. What he came back to was, everything has a creative way to respond. Every situation, every person, everything we do. And he said what he finds is that he loves to have problems. how to solve a problem. And we gave him a lot of them. We had this area in the cottage that we wanted to access to have a place for people to be able to stay. We could put a really steep ladder up, or we could build stairs that went like this, half stairs they call them, and so they take half as much space to build. Sometime when you come to Mountain Map, we'll show you the staircase he built. It is a work of all art, and it's so easy to get to the loft. Almost anybody could do it. This week's assignment is to sit in stillness for 20 minutes each morning. Embody the stillness that is who you are. And to touch that source of love and joy and let it sing through you, through your day. Decide on a creative project, and it can be something you want to do just right that day. Maybe you want to cook a meal for someone you love. You're inspired. Maybe if you want to take this 8 weeks and you want to make the commitment to write in your journal every single day for 15 minutes. Find something that sings to you and sing back. Let it sing through you. The second part of this assignment is no judgment. No judgment at all. Let it go. Come back. And one of the wonderful ways to come back when we find ourselves in self-judgment is to come back and smile. It's really, really important that we create safety for ourselves. It's a really important part of our practice of mindfulness. It's really important of allowing our true creative being that we all are to shine forth. Really, it's the basis of our practice. It's not just sitting in silence and getting quiet, but it's stepping forth from that place to respond to the world, to offer who we are to the world. And every single person here has a gift that the world needs desperately. Our practice period is to dance with that and to sing it out.
Our teacher in Plum Village, Tai, from the very beginning, from when I first met him in the 80s, always spoke about how important it is for us to be able to express our practice through singing. And as a result of that, people have been rewriting songs of practice for 30 years. So that might be something you consider doing during this practice period. Finding a song that comes from within yourself that expresses your particular practice. We'll also be learning the new ones and singing a new one each week. And the one I'd like to introduce this week is a song about refuge, a song of safety. It was written a long time ago by Sister Annabel during the 1980s. And I'd like to teach it tonight.
It goes, breathing in, I go back to the island within myself. There are beautiful trees within the island. There are clear streams of water. There are birds, sunshine, and fresh air. Breathing out, I feel safe. I enjoy going back to my island. If you find yourself caught in judgment, you can sing this to yourself. Yeah, create safety for yourself. So I'll sing one line and you can repeat it back. Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself.
Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself.
There are beautiful trees within the island. Refuge, and it is a really important part of our practice to find a place of refuge. When we find ourselves caught in self-criticism, in judgment of others, of rejection, of pain, it's really wonderful to have a place to come take refuge so we don't get lost there. Because that's a very small place, and we are vast. We are fathomless. We're involved in a great mystery, and every moment we are an expression of that mystery. And so having a place of refuge allows us to touch really truly how big, how wonderful, how mysterious and creative we are. So I'm going to turn off the tape recorders and let's sing that song together again.